Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got a full house today. We got three people talking about how to make things work in the federal government in the digital world. I mean, this is a great topic to have. We have three complete separate different people talking about the VA, talking about how you can do change management, and we're going to have all kinds of great stories. We have three different people. Let me introduce them one by one by one. Our first guest is Emily Tavalarius. She's a founding member of Digital Services at the VA. We have Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. And we have Blake Hall, founder and CEO at ID.me. Welcome, you three. How are you doing?
Great.
Great.
Doing great.
Yeah, there are some people in the audience here who know these names, some people who don't. So I wanted to go one by one, and maybe Emily can talk about your background and how you wound up working in the digital services area, please.
Sure. I actually don't have a technical pedigree, which I think is a fun story of a number of people who do product work in the federal government at this point. I spent my entire career focused on understanding what people need in the field and getting it to them, especially when we're talking about underserved populations. So how do we help people who typically don't have access to the things that we all have access to every day get the things that they need the most when they need them?
So in the big picture, if the federal government has a product or service for a citizen, you would be the one that would try to understand how to deliver that. Is that a
correct
big in general? Well, good. Yeah. So perfect sense what you're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, your background, please.
I'm a software engineer. I've been living and working in the Baltimore, D.C. area for the past almost 20 years. And when you do that, eventually you end up working with the federal government. My first experience about 12 years ago, I was very young, worked for a large government contractor at a large government agency, and it was an absolutely horrible experience as a software developer, and I swore never to go back until about 8 or 9 years later. I had the opportunity to work on a project that was run very much like a startup in the government and was really energized by that, which led me to get involved with the Presidential Innovation Fellowship Program and eventually found my company Ad Hoc to bring people and processes very common in the consumer world, the consumer technology, the private sector, to the government space.
You know, many of my listeners are federal IT professionals. And if they go to your LinkedIn profile, the first sentence is, I am a software developer. So that's confident. That's good to know. I mean, and so she tries to figure out what the problems are, and you use some of your skills to try to maybe help the citizens in many different ways. Our third guest is Blake Hall. Tell us about your background and how you wound up in this room with this distinguished company.
More distinguished than me, for sure. Third generation soldier, so working with the VA is very important to me personally because almost everyone in my family is a veteran. Was an infantry officer in the Army myself, and had the opportunity to work with some signal intelligence programs while I was in the military over in Iraq. Went to Harvard Business School 2008, 2010, and that's where I realized that a lot of challenges with digital identity were keeping veterans from accessing very important services from their government online in a variety of different economic sectors. And so for the last 6 years, have really dedicated myself to building ID.me as a platform that helps veterans get access to the entitled benefits they've earned. But it takes a team. Identity is only one small component of it. The apps that they're accessing are equally, if not more, important. So yeah, that's my background, how I got into the space.
Emily, when I deal with small companies, I always ask, what business problem do you solve? But you solve this huge, big problem. So just to define for the audience, what's this whole thing behind veterans.gov and what were you trying to accomplish?
Sure. So as many of our veteran listeners will know, one of the primary obstacles to interacting and engaging with the VA is that there are multiple points of entry. There are multiple logins, there are multiple phone numbers to call, multiple websites, and multiple is a very kind way of saying it. It's really, there are hundreds of each of these things, hundreds of applications online, et cetera. And what we really need to do is make it possible for people to interact with the VA in a seamless way that mirrors their experience with the private sector. I mean, a lot of the problems that the agency faces, and I think this goes not just for the VA, but across for the entire federal space, is the gap between the experience of citizens interacting with government and interacting with the private sector has grown tremendously. You know, I can book a villa in Cambodia from my couch, right, in a matter of minutes. Yet, you know, veterans are still waiting for tremendous amounts of time to process claims and healthcare applications. So this is our first effort in trying to simplify that.
And by the way, on Emily's LinkedIn profile, she has one simple sentence: I solve complex problems. So Blake, you're in the right room here, you know? You got people that enjoy using software to solve problems. So maybe you can expand on the problem a little bit more, Greg. So what was going on? Lots of different sites, and people were confused of which site to go to get to what. They were not actually getting some of the benefits they were deserved, huh?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at VA and the services that they offer to veterans, you know, the common problem, we see this a lot around the federal government, is that when an agency approaches the services that they offer, they tend to approach it from the perspective of how they are organized bureaucratically. And so I think that when you look at VA and you look at the different services that they currently have, it's sort of a natural outgrowth of their organizational structure. And so I think one of the big movements that's going on in the federal government space, you know, that the digital services team is leading and that companies like us are very keen to get involved with, is projects which are reoriented around the user's experience and the user's needs. And that really, I think, fundamentally changes the way that you approach an application, the way you prioritize what you build, and even the technologies that you use to build it out, and the kinds of tools and services that you incorporate into the experience. How do users log into the site? How do users, you know, get reminded about things? All these kinds of things are very, you know, approached very differently when you take the position of the user's needs coming first.
And Blake, one initial need for everyone is just identifying themselves as a veteran or a citizen or something. So that's really what starts, doesn't it?
That's right. I think the intent and the initiative that Secretary McDonald started is that there's, you know, one website to visit, one phone call to call if you want to interact with the VA. And certainly I'm familiar with that as a veteran. When I was in Boston, I interacted with the VA up there, came down here to D.C. And I think when I called like the local VA facility, they told me that my records were still in Boston and I needed to go through some kind of complex process to get them transferred down here, and there was a different phone number to call to do that. It was super confusing. And I was like, I think I'm a pretty smart guy. I'm a Harvard MBA. And if I can't really parse like what I need to do to get access to VA services, that's a problem certainly a problem for my soldiers that have to navigate that and maybe don't have the benefit of the education that I've received. So having a login is the first thing that you need to do to get access. And it's not sexy. Identity is infrastructure. It's like electricity. You know, you should just take it for granted if it's working well, and it shouldn't get in your way. But unfortunately, you know, before we move to this level of assurance 3 login, which is just a fancy way of saying that we can prove your legal identity online in a way that the government can trust, veterans had to go in person to a VA facility to upgrade their login. And for a lot of veterans that lived in remote parts of the country that didn't have easy geographic access to a VA, that's something that felt deeply unfair. I mean, even if you live here in DC, the notion that you would have to go to a VA facility in person to do things online is backwards. And so we really wanted to kind of create an experience that would meet federal requirements for trust and also help veterans get access to services that they need and important apps that, you know, Emily and Greg are making available for them at vets.gov.
Wow, there's a key phrase there, trust. And that's what we talk about. Let's take a break here, come back, and talk more about vets.gov and trust, and who do you trust, and how do you get on, and what kind of benefits there, and maybe talk about some of the challenges in all these different sites and trying to pour them into one site. And there's a phrase that's commonly associated with this called single sign-on. But I think Greg describes it better when he talks about one front door. Talking about the front door to vets.gov. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, We have Blake Hall, founder and CEO at ID.me. We have Emily Tavalarius, who's a founding member at Digital Services at the VA, and Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 15 AM. We are in the studio today with three experts in the area. I think the area of change management. I think that's all your new titles are all change management experts, because that's what's going on. Because they did a lot of changes over at the VA, and they come up with this site called vets.gov. We're talking about different aspects of the site and the challenges and how they put it all together, and it seems to work real well. In the studio of Blake Hall, founder and CEO at ID.me, we have Emily Tavalarius, who is a founding member of Digital Services, the VA, Greg Gershman, who is the CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. Greg, I'm going to pick on you first. So 500 sites, put them all together, get the parts working together. I mean, so just give me a half a dozen of the initial challenges you had in doing that.
Sure. As always, one of the really chief challenges is understanding what veterans and the users actually need, and making sure that you're constantly in contact with them, you know, interviewing them, researching what their needs are and talking to them, and making sure that they're, able to use whatever it is that you're building or designing. In VA's particular case, one of the big challenges that we're dealing with there is, vets.gov is sitting on top of just a whole set of enterprise VA services, legacy systems. And so, understanding the technical capabilities of those different systems, how to integrate with them, how reliable they are, how stable they are, those kinds of things is immensely challenging. There's not a lot of, similarities between these systems, because, again, they kind of all come from different, points in the history of VA's enterprise development. So putting a team together that really, on the one hand, can focus on the user needs and really make sure that those are understood, and at the same time, just have a diverse set of skills to be able to tackle all these different technical challenges that come up are two, I'd say, the biggest challenges that we face.
And so that's Emily's challenge, is the user needs. And so let's toss to you and ask, so what exactly is the United States Digital Service? I know what the Secret Service is, so what's the Digital Service? The same kind of a thing?
Sure, for technology, maybe. The U.S. Digital Service is a team of the country's best and brightest technologists, engineers, designers, product managers, data scientists, who come from the private sector to serve their country. For many people, serving means going into the military. For others, we have not had that experience, and this is really our way to contribute our skill set back to the people in this country. So, what we've done over the years, this was a team that grew out of the healthcare.gov situation. As a result of healthcare.gov, the Obama administration decided, wow, it was incredibly helpful to have a group of people from the private sector who really understand how to build great usable products for people. Why don't we scale that up? So that was the genesis, essentially, of this team, with the headquarters team resting at the Office of Management and Budget, and the VA team being the first agency level team.
I can think of a Navy SEAL Team 6. Put them in on. They fix healthcare.gov. Put them in over there. Mr. Fix-It shows up, and really, it's what it was. You got a reputation and expanded it.
Yeah, it's and it's been. I think it probably sounds a little bit crazy, but it has been really fun. It's a fascinating set of problems. They are the most important, some of the most important problems the government is tackling. I can't think of many problems that are more important than helping the people who have served this country overseas and in the field of battle, getting what is due to them, and making it not a painful experience.
I don't want to be too serious here, but I have a brother-in-law who's in a hospital in Tulsa, Oklahoma right now, VA hospital. Yeah. And he depends on all this stuff. And guess what? He's got a smartphone, and he can access things because he can't walk. Yeah. I'm not going to get serious here. I'll lighten up. I'm going to pick on Blake here and have a nice, light, fun question. F5 Networks, they did a white paper, the State of Application Delivery Report. They looked at the five most popular applications that are being deployed in enterprises across the country, across the world: security, performance, availability, identity management, and mobility. And now people are throwing out this term, ID.man. It's ID.man, and now it's becoming so popular. So right. Who would have thunk this 5 years ago? I wouldn't have thought. Yeah. ID.man, what's the difference?
Well, I think, you know, it's a problem that we're familiar with as consumers, and it's almost what Greg was talking about earlier, where enterprises approach problems from their own perspective, from the perspective of their bureaucracy. And the pain that we feel as a result of that approach as consumers is that the average American manages somewhere between 75 to 100 different logins. And good luck having a strong, unique password for each one of them. So if you're anything
and
like
changed me, every 90 days,
you,
yeah.
Right. You use, right, for all 100 passwords, it's just not sustainable. So if you're anything like me, you use two or three strong passwords and you reuse them across all of those sites. And fortunately, if any one of them is breached and is sold on the dark web, then bad guys can buy your password for 50 cents and they can get into all these different applications that you're using. When you talk about really trusted transactions where you not only need to create an email and password and remember that, you also need to create what's called multi-factor authentication, which most folks are familiar with. If they log into their bank and they get a text message to their phone, they have to do two things to log in. So you have to do that, and then you have to prove your identity. And a lot of people are familiar with answering questions about their mortgage and their address history and things mm-hmm. like that. You know, the notion that you would have to do that multiple times at a single federal agency with a new login, and then you'd have to do that at the IRS and Social Security and the VA, and then maybe multiple times, it's clearly not something that citizens can do. It is not a usable experience. And so the goal from an identity perspective is to make the process more similar to a driver's license. You go and you get credentialed once, and then once you have that credential, that login, you can bring it with you across all the different websites that need to trust your legal identity. And so that's, we're one vendor in that space that does that. There are four that are currently accredited under the GSA's FICAM program. Verizon, Symantec, and Athena Health are the other three single sign-ons or logins that are accredited. But our goal certainly, you know, with the VA is get credentialed once, and now you've got a single login that you can use to access all these apps that, you know, Greg and Emily and team are bringing over to vets.gov.
So, Greg, the goal here is a secure, interoperable credential. Sounds real nice. We can put it on a whiteboard and go to lunch and have pizzas, but putting it into place, that's the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's all based on a lot of standard technologies, and you know that part, the technical part of it, is actually pretty well tread, I think you know not a huge challenge. I think the challenges really come in getting users used to this this idea, and having them be able to understand the user experience and the becoming familiar with this process, and it's, you know, It's a little bit of a leap at first, but we've had, I think, a really great success in refining the experience, testing it with users, and, you know, working on taking, you know, what is really, you know, can be a very confusing experience up front, and refining that down towards something where, you know, with the user's feedback, is something that really is very familiar and very natural to them in terms of logging in and getting access to an account.
Emily, I know you put the U in the user experience here. I have a tweet in front of me. Mm-hmm. I sound like I'm another person. I have a tweet in front of me, and it says, "Love the new vets.gov, an amazing UX for those of us used to digital services from at Department of Veteran Affairs." You should put this on your kitchen refrigerator at home, huh?
Oh, that's so great.
And
that's
your job, huh? User experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like Greg was saying earlier, you know, I think the federal government and a lot of, quite frankly, not only the public sector, just very large, any large organization, right? This is a problem of bureaucracy and of size, not necessarily of public versus private sector. The bureaucracy itself and the organization itself ends up prioritizing its own needs for reasons that are probably too many to get into in this show. But, you know, the products that come out of these organizations tend to reflect their needs as opposed to the needs of their users. And the processes that lead to modern usable technology force teams to get into the field and talk to people. So this is methodologies like human-centered design, like agile development, which is the sort of the last third of the human-centered design process, forces the organization to step out of its comfort zone, step out of the office, and go talk to people, validate their assumptions, right? I think a lot of the products that we've seen in the federal government and at every level, quite frankly, come out of very well-intentioned programs where people spend a lot of time in an office trying to scope out what they believe people need. And that is never, there's never really a chance to validate that. So that's what we bring to the table.
It's always a shock when you have to force yourself into listening to someone else. And
yeah. Find,
but, and you've been successful at it. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about some of the challenges in putting this vets.gov site together. This is Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. Our guest today, Blake Hall, founder and CEO at ID.me, Emmy Tablerius, founding member of Digital Services at the VA, and Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We got a room full of brainiacs here. We're talking about challenges in moving over to vets.gov, talking about many different aspects of it. In the studio, we have Blake Hall, founder and CEO of ID.me. We have Emily Tavalarius, who's a founding member of Digital Services at the VA. And we have Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. And when I look at vets.gov, we talk about apps, and we've mentioned about apps in the F5 report earlier. So were there any challenges in porting in apps to this new site, Greg?
Yeah, so I mean, the general approach is, you know, looking at a combination of what are the things that veterans use the most, need the most, are the most urgent that we can create a better experience for them. And then also looking at the technical challenges involved, how complex is the underlying systems that we have to integrate with. And how easily will we be able to tackle that? So, you know, it's kind of a calculus of doing that analysis, doing a little bit of discovery on the existing applications, combining that with some research and some design, and then, you know, doing a technical evaluation. We started off with the first application ported over was the application for healthcare, very important, mm-hmm. Giving veterans access to health insurance. After that, we've moved on to things. We've worked on claim status, getting status of in process claims, education benefits, prescription refills, and communicating securely with your medical provider.
Emily, I teach over here at Georgetown, and I've got some really smart students. I have a student who already has an MBA, and he's working for a consultancy as a UI/UX expert. Mm-hmm. And so if I say the word responsive, he can give me a 3-hour answer on what that means and doesn't mean. But there are people like my brother-in-law in Oklahoma who got a high school and they're in the hospital and they don't know what responsive means. But I think they really, really do once they use an app. So what is responsive design when it comes to vets.gov?
So I'd answer that in two ways. One is that it responds to the needs of the user. Number one, but really when I hear responsive design, I think of mobile, right? So you're building, instead of building a website that you access through a laptop or, your computer, you're building one that can scale to multiple pieces of hardware. So no matter what kind of device you're using, you can still access and use that website without it looking all janky and like buttons being in the wrong places and stuff. Oftentimes, and we've seen this, several times throughout the last few years, what we find is that products are built, in the federal space in four different types of products. So there's like a website and then there's a mobile version. And the truth is you can build one that is responsive to all types of devices. And that's ultimately the direction that we can and should be going, because that is what modern software and modern technology looks like.
And for many of the millions of users out there, they may not be able to define responsive as well as you did, but they're going to know it when they see it. I mean, they're going to pick something on their phone,
right,
and go, this is a pain. I can't do it. I hit this button. It doesn't. Every time it changes to this, and now I can't see it in the phone, and then you wind up throwing the phone or something
yeah,
bad
and that's,
happens.
And honestly, that's one of the benefits of when you were talking about sort of change management. One of the outputs, sort of in indirect outputs of the work that we've been doing is that the people that we've been working with at the agencies and leadership have been understanding that there is a different way to operate. There is a more efficient, more effective way to deliver services to the public, and that technology is no longer this like extra shiny thing on the side. It is actually the spinal cord of the way that these agencies operate. And going through these processes of moving from waterfall development to agile to a modern technical environment has helped highlight that, largely because people know exactly what good technology is. They know it when they see it. They don't necessarily know how it's built. So it's been a really helpful approach to changing the way things work.
Yeah, I can see people that are limited to smartphones really being able to use what you can provide. Yeah. You know, Blake, I'm a lot older than you. When I was your age, there was a song called "Who Are You?" by The Who. And that's the question that your company answers. Who are you, right? And so how have other agencies taken up on this challenge of who are you?
Yeah, so, and I think we're all familiar with that as consumers as well. We've sort of thrown up our hands at controlling our personal data. You know, in many cases, either Facebook or Google make it easier to log in at websites, but they're advertising companies, so you're giving up control over the use of your personal data. You're helping those advertising companies build a profile of you. And then in other sectors of the economy, like for banks and telecoms, identity is often a moat where once you've proved your identity and you've got a very secure login with your financial institution, they have a disincentive to letting you take that login with you to other places because it would make it easier for their competitors to open up financial accounts. And so what's happened is that citizens and consumers have been disintermediated from control of a login in their own personal data that should be portable but isn't. Or if it is, it's being used in certain ways, like for advertising purposes, that a lot of people just aren't comfortable with for privacy reasons. And so we think that the public sector is a really important economic sector to start to solve this problem by creating a portable credential that meets the government's trust standards and is accepted across federal websites. So we're working with four other federal agencies in addition to the VA and vets.gov. The state of Maine is integrating us right now for different licensing services and even potentially taxation purposes where you can conduct those sorts of transactions online. And a Fortune 100 financial institution is integrating us for account opening. And so the whole notion is that if you prove your identity and you establish a secure login with ID.me at any one of those entities, you can then take your identity with you to any of those other websites or organizations and very quickly log in with a login that you use frequently. We minimize the amount of data that those organizations can request based on the reasonable data fields that are tied to a transaction. And then you have to consent to releasing that data after reviewing what that organization is going to receive. So it's really a user-centric model where you have control of your data. We never rent, sell, share data with anybody. We really regard ourselves almost like an identity bank, that data is sort of like a renewable, reusable currency. And the only person who should control it is the actual end user, is that citizen or that consumer. So really, we're beginning to change the way that the internet works, in that you can have a login that is yours and personal data that is yours, and you decide how it's used and where it's used. And the more places where we can make that login accepted, the more valuable our service and our infrastructure will become to end users.
So, Greg, a little technical question for you here. Earlier in the show, we talked about this level of assurance 3. Now, that's not a VA standard. Is that from the GSA, or where does that originate?
Yeah, LOA 3, level of assurance 3, is a standard defined by NIST and is in use.
Oh, so that's where it's from.
Yeah, it's part of... an initiative from the Obama administration called the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. And then there's a federal component to that, which is called FICAM, Federal Identity Credential Access Management.
Well, you just beat out interoperability there, didn't you? And you also beat out, what was the word, disintermediation. So,
yeah,
wow, well, I'm going to lose listeners all over the place with those big fancy words. And so what you're doing is just taking standards established by NIST and applying them in a reasonable way, which is the word that Blake just used, to vets.gov, so a veteran in Montana can get what he wants. And Emily's going to step in and say, make sure that it's going to be easy for him to use it, and the screen's not going to collapse on him. And if he uses an Android, it's going to look the same thing on his laptop and his desktop. And,
exactly.
And that's the hard part, is because what kind of devices are out there now? I mean, old people in retirement homes are on smartphones and laptops and everything. What device is out there? So many.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a general sort of preconception of quote unquote old people as not being tech savvy and not using the internet or not using their mobile devices. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. This is why user research and field research is so incredibly important. And I think one of the most interesting, from my perspective, of course, parts of the team that's developed is our research team, which is in the field constantly talking to people to understand, like, what is the difference between our perception of our users and the reality of our users. And the truth is, when you think about from a human-centered design perspective, who the personas are, quote unquote, for our websites and the use cases, we actually have very, very highly technical older people who are using their mobile devices regularly, like they bank online, et cetera, and younger people who, quite frankly, it's not that they're not technically savvy, they just don't really enjoy using their cell phones. They'd rather walk into a clinic and get the answers that they need. So it's not necessarily an age thing. And what we're trying to understand is how do we best understand our users in a way that can help us create technology that works for them.
Research teams in the field. Is this Procter & Gamble? No, this is vets.gov. This is the amazing part. I mean, it sounds like a commercial company trying to gather data and define that persona real carefully. Mm-hmm. That's good. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about vets.gov and some of the challenges involved in creating the site. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we got a full house. Blake Hall, founder and CEO of ID.me. Emmy Tavalarius, founding member digital services at the VA, and Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Blake Hall, founder and CEO of ID.me, Emily Tavalarius, founding member digital services at the VA, and Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC. We're talking about a little website called vets.gov and some of the challenges in putting this website together and identity management and user interface and some of the technical challenges here. And Greg, I have to ask you this. Many of my listeners will grab me at an event or something and say, well, that Greg sounds real smart. He knows all those big fancy terms out of NIST. What does he read to keep up? So I'll ask you, so how do you keep up with all these terms? I mean, it's got to be difficult.
You know, a lot of this stuff just comes from working in and around it day in and day out for the past 5 or 6 years. You know, you pick up a lot and you know, kind of when I joined, I was a presidential innovation fellow and had a lot of ideas coming from the private sector about what government was like. And so, you know, got a good crash course in the first couple months there, you know, thinking that the problems were technical and finding out that, you know, a lot of the impediments to putting out stuff like this in the government is just process and bureaucracy, you know, understanding all these different things and, you know, understanding where they come from and what the ideas are behind them, because those are usually very good and helpful to everyone involved. You know, they have good intentions, but then also understanding like how we can kind of streamline the process and move things forward. So my recommendation is you got to live it in order to really to really understand it and get to know it.
I'll read between the lines. I think it's your social skills. I mean, you could have sat in there and just been the smartest guy in the room and bullied people intellectually. That's not going to get you anywhere. But if you work with people and understand and empathize, all of a sudden you can have things happen and change. And that's, I think that's half your skill set is in interpersonal relations.
I'd love to follow up on that.
he's actually a jerk.
Greg. No, I mean, I could not more wholeheartedly agree with what Greg is saying, and sort of building on what you're pointing to. You cannot make change in government if you just come in believing that you have all the answers, because there are reasons that the place operates the way it does, and some for better, some for worse. But the truth is, the government is made up of civil servants who care about their work. They came here to serve the American public, and they, for all sorts of reasons, don't have the space they need to maneuver. They don't have the tools they need necessarily to make the most modern technical decisions. And we could not be making the progress that we're making on our own without the people who have been at the agencies for decades. They know the agency, they know its needs, they know how it operates. So really, I think the success I want to really put a pin in here is that when you pull together the people who have built careers in government and really understand, who are experts in government, basically, and government function, and you pair them with people who really, really understand how good technology is built and how good user experiences can happen, that's when the magic happens. They cannot happen independently of each other. And that is something that we're working really hard on.
So it's like a wine pairing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like that. You know, Blake, earlier, Emily used the phrase, oh my goodness, there's a phrase about using people in the field talk about usability testing and perception. That's the word to use, perception. And the perception is that hackers are coming into systems and causing all kinds of problems. But Verizon has showed us that sometimes it's not just hackers. Sometimes it's the reality. The reality is it could be identity management, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think it always surprises me when people talk about cybersecurity and they leave identity and strong authentication off their list of topics, because Verizon publishes an overview of all the data breaches that happen. It's a great study that almost every cybersecurity professional is aware of. And if you're not, go and download it. But 63% of data breaches don't happen because systems were penetrated. They happen because credentials were compromised. It's how the OPM hack happened. You had an administrator's credential that was compromised, and so over 22 million records were compromised, our intelligence and national security community. And then the Anthem healthcare breach, which compromised 78.8 million Americans' names and date of births and social security numbers. I mean, it's hard to comprehend what could be a bigger breach than that. Also happened because a credential was breached. And so, you know, when you think about that almost two-thirds of all the data breaches happened because credentials were compromised in some way, we view identity and strong authentication as the front door to cybersecurity. Like, make sure the front door is closed. The notion of these like brilliant hackers who find open ports and are able to get through your firewalls and everything else, that's not the way that most breaches actually happen in practice. And if you can cut down on breaches by two-thirds just through better management of credentials, that's a huge win, and one that we hope we're a part of a trend of good guys to cut down the incidents of fraud that happen that way.
So Emily, if someone's listening to this interview and it's the middle of baseball season and Bryce is hitting homers left and right, and they're thinking about learning about UI, UX, what kind of sources, what kind of resources do you think they should go to? What would you suggest they read?
That's a good question. I sort of default to Greg's answer earlier as well, which is like the best way to learn it and learn about it is to start getting your hands dirty.
Talk
to people, if you know people who are working in the space, take them out for a coffee, chat with them, try and understand sort of what the process is like. But, you know, on a day-to-day, I think fastco.design is a really great resource. The IDEO puts out really great publications. The Stanford Design School puts out great publications. But there is, you know, online there are plenty of places to go and look for the most up-to-date sort of news coming out of the design world. Twitter is always your friend in that space to discover new work and new writers. Beyond that, I would say, as far as reading goes, I have personally gotten more and more interested in publications that are about how government works or does not sometimes, and what it looks like from a policy perspective to be making decisions and creating the environment in which a lot of this work actually happens. So for people who are interested in delivering social services better to the public, more efficiently and effectively, I would also say that the government is probably the only place that you can make change at scale at the level that it's happening here, and that understanding that institution and the way it functions is pretty core to that.
Great. We just got a minute left. I'm going to give you a one-minute test here. There must be 500,000 people in the VA. I mean, contractors, people coming and going, everything else. I mean, it's a pretty vulnerable environment. So what do you think is going to happen in the next 4 to 6 years? You think it's going to be compromised? You think this change to one site is going to prevent people from getting in or bad things happening? So where do you see the site heading in the next 4 or 5 years?
The focus over the next, I'd say, year and a half is moving as many services as we possibly can onto vets.gov. And then, you know, working from there is just constantly making sure that the experience that we're presenting to users is one that they're able to understand and to navigate is sympathetic and empathetic to their needs and what it is that they're, you know, where they are currently. I think that we're putting in place a platform that is scalable. The technologies that we're using, open source technologies, the tools that we're integrating with, like IDMe, these are all tools that are going to scale over time and we'll be able to stay updated as technology changes and as, as new kinds of vulnerabilities are revealed. We're positioning VA, I think, in a really good place so that their system is not something that, you know, in 3 to 5 years from now, they can't change it if there needs to be some kind of adaptation to a new reality. We're putting in place the tools and the technology and, you know, the kinds of people that are able to respond very quickly to new threats, to new opportunities, creating new experiences and things like that. So I can't crystal ball out what's going to be down the road, but I think the best approach for that is to just put in place, you know, practices that let you, turn the ship as quickly as possible down the road when you need to make a change.
Yeah, good, solid, and flexible, and expect change because it's going to happen. And who knows what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years here. It's going to be pretty wild. Well, we've spent an hour talking about vets.gov and some challenges inherent in putting together the site. We're going to have to end here. Our guests have been Blake Hall, founder and CEO of IDMe, Greg Gershman, CEO at Ad Hoc LLC, and Emily Tavalarius, founding member of Digital Services at the VA.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.